Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. This week we are excited to welcome Kerry Schaefer. Kerry writes fantasy and mystery that delves into the paranormal and women's fiction that embraces the dark and twisted realms of humanity.
Ooh.
Her first two books of her Between trilogy were published through Ace Books Penguin, and The Nothing was released as an indie book. The first book in Kerry's paranormal mystery series, Dead Before Dying, was released by Division Books on February 9th, 2016. Welcome, Kerry!
Hi, how's it going?
So, we have to tell everybody that we had a bit of a job to get us all together today, and Kerry's now sat in a truck somewhere in Southern Washington, outside the coffee shop, getting a signal. So, this is, you know, we really go out of our way to get this show to you guys. You just need to know that. God bless you, Kerry.
Hey, the coffee is fine. We're good.
Yes. So nicely that kind of, you know, takes us around to the first question, which is tell us about your journey as a writer. How long have you been writing and what attracted you to being one?
Oh, that's the question that always makes me want to say, when did you start breathing and what's your journey been like? Yeah, my mom started me off reading before I ever went to school, and I was one of those kids that always had a nose in a book. And as soon as I figured out how to do the writing thing, I've been writing something ever since I can remember.
Wow. And so did that go on from school and then you became a writer? How did that sort of transcend into writing for a living?
Oh, well, that's been a long journey. And writing for a living, you say?
Well, kind of a living.
I laugh. Yeah. We're working towards writing for a living. I know it was a very, very long journey. I started writing poetry probably around about sixth grade. And I did have a poem published around that time, which actually I was embarrassed about. My teacher sent it in and I was humiliated because, well, it wasn't cool at my school, you know.
Particularly in sixth grade, huh?
Yeah. Yes, or in high school, really. But we went on from there. I wrote poetry for quite a while. When my kids were little, I wrote picture books. I very nearly had a picture book published. It was called Brian's Lion, and it was about my son's little imaginary adventures with his lion. And then I just kept writing. It took me 10 years to write my first novel.
KJ understands that, right, KJ?
Yeah, that sounds really familiar. Kids and trying to write for 10 years. Yeah.
It was a slow going process between kids and work and all of those things. And then I finally figured out, a friend talked me into doing NaNoWriMo one year, which for those who don't know is National Novel Writing Month in November, where you try foolishly and insanely to write a novel in 30 days, which I succeeded in doing. And the lights went on and I realized that, well, I can make time to write in my world if I'm prepared to give up a whole bunch of other stuff. Since then, I've been writing regularly and faithfully and actually have gotten published and am on my way. I'm hoping to being able to stay home and write more than I am at the day job.
Now, that makes sense. And, you know, so when you first picked up, you picked up because you have published novels, right, through traditional as well as indie routes. So which was your first novel that was picked up?
Between was the first one that was picked up. And actually, that was kind of a fun story because I was doing that crazy, you know, querying thing. We writers all know how much fun that is. And not being particularly successful at that, I might add. But I had hooked up with a writer's group online that was called Book Country. It happened to be operated by Penguin. It was an experiment, and it was a writer's workshopping group. But they were also hoping that something else would happen there, that editors and agents would also come online and possibly pick up writers there rather than going through the slush pile. So I was actually really lucky to be the very first person who was picked out of that Book Country by an editor.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really fun. So there was lots of excitement with the very first book. I got my editor and my agent, on the same day, pretty much.
Cool.
And lots of excitement and enthusiasm, and yeah, it was fun.
Wow, and then you went on to write what more? So actually, you're, tell us a little bit, because The Nothing is part of that first trilogy, right? Is that the same trilogy that you worked on, the book The Nothing?
Right, correct. When I first wrote Between, it was originally more or less intended as a standalone. But when Penguin acquired it, we decided it should be a trilogy, which was great. And I was able to, I had left it kind of open to that. So I began planning for that. They published the second book, Wake World, and then they decided that they really weren't interested in the third book. So I had a choice to make at that point, whether I was prepared to let it just stand at that or whether I was going to finish it. As you may have noticed with the whole finding an internet signal routine, I'm not one to just give up on things very easily. So I
good demonstration of your tenacity for sure.
I chose to finish the trilogy, and I did it indie. I did it through a Kickstarter, although it also cost me money to do indie the way that I think personally that I wanted it to be done. It wasn't a cheap proposition, so it was something that was not cost effective, but I feel very good about knowing that all three books are out there and available.
And you rewarded your readers. They were waiting for that third book. So, you know, publishers aside, they would have felt that sense of lack if you said it was going to be a trilogy. So I think that was really a good idea. Tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter. How did you get the idea? How did that work? What did you actually have people contribute to, and how did you sort of set that up?
Oh, the Kickstarter, yeah. That was not a thing that I ever wanted to do, really, or might ever do again. I have a model for myself, which is basically pretty much if I'm scared to do something, I have to then do it.
Oh, I like that.
That doesn't go with things that I believe to be truly life-threatening, like jumping off buildings or that kind of thing, but when it comes to publishing, I put that rule in place for myself very, very early on. So I was talking to a wonderful editor about maybe acquiring his services to edit the manuscript when it was done, and he suggested I should do a Kickstarter, and I said, oh, God, no. And then I said, oh, bleep.
You bleeped yourself. I like it.
I bleeped myself. What were we going to do? Casting? No.
She's a self-bleeper.
Yeah, so I realized that I had just said I was scared to do this thing, and I really was. I think doing a Kickstarter for me was terrifying because it was like, oh, you know, if I fail, that means people don't like my writing and nobody will ever love my books, and this is really, really putting myself somewhere where I don't want to be, you know, all of those kind of thoughts. So, yeah, I had to do it then. So I did, and it was successful. We did make what I was looking for, and it did significantly help to pay for editing costs, and I was able to pay my cover designer some. He was actually willing to work for free, but I wanted to pay him. So it was a great experience. I don't regret doing it at all. It's just probably not something that I would love to do again.
Did you find that people got excited as the audience, though? I mean, did some of the people that contribute to the Kickstarter end up buying the book just because they've been part of that experience?
Well, what happens with the Kickstarter is really you give away your product as rewards to the people
right.
for the Kickstarter. So I found for a lot of my friends who've done the Kickstarter, I think it did work that way. And some of them have had like really brilliant successes with the Kickstarters and lots of enthusiasm. I kind of felt like I used up all of the goodwill of my supporting fans before the book was ever published. And
That should be really counterproductive.
I'm not someone who likes to do a lot of marketing broadcasting online, and I really, by the time we were done and the book was out, and did not really feel like I could do a whole lot more of that. So I'm not sure in the long run if it helped to get the word out or not, but it did, you know, as we said earlier, it did supply that third book for my readers, which was really important to me. As a reader, I hate that if I picked up a series and then it just ends and it's not finished.
Yeah,
Me too.
You know, those characters are perpetually and forever in limbo, and that's a horrible thing. So I didn't want to do that to my readers or my characters. So, you know, I am really, really glad that we did it and we got her done.
Well, I'm sure your characters and your readers thank you.
Yeah.
So you finished them off. You actually write through a couple of genres. By the looks of it, you do women's fiction, dark and twisted, but you also do the paranormal. Do you have a different strategy or a different way that you hit that process when you're writing, to write in the different genres?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I'm not much of a strategist. I do most things kind of from the gut, if that makes any sense. So,
no, totally.
When I write, I'm getting better about trying to sit down and be a little bit strategic. The women's fiction really just kind of almost writes itself for me. I am a mental health counselor. I've spent 5 years working crisis. I'm also a nurse. I have a lot of personal experiences with grief and that sort of thing. So when I sit down to write a book that's about characters who are going through emotional relationship times, it writes easily. I don't have to think about it as much. When I'm doing the mystery, it's a lot of brain twisty stuff. Really, as were the fantasy books that I wrote. So lots and lots more thinking and deleting and throwing away and trying to figure out how to make the plot work for those kinds of books.
Because I suppose when you're just following characters with emotional trauma, there's a set pattern, isn't there? With the paranormal, it's just, there's nothing, there's no pattern. You have to almost create that world, yeah. Right from scratch.
Right. Well, writing paranormal is really a lot like writing fantasy. So there is a lot of world building with that, right, for sure. What are the rules of the world in which you live? But then with the mystery, the whole other component between, getting my books mixed up now. Dead Before Dying was the first mystery I had ever written. And so that right there is a whole different kind of a framework. You know, readers expect that the mystery is going to be set up within a certain time frame, and then you have to remember to plant clues at certain intervals and make sure that you don't give too much away and make sure, well, at least really try and have the ending be a twist and a surprise that nobody sees coming and all that kind of stuff. So for someone like me who doesn't actually plot much, it's a very different stretch. It's a stretch of my intellectual capacity.
And you're just as surprised as the reader when you get to it. Wow, I never saw that coming.
Actually, there's some truth to that.
Yeah. I know, because I write like that too. Like, oh my gosh, I never thought you'd do that. And there's like, oh, that was my brain all gone.
Right. Well, I think the subconscious knows, like my whole journey as a writer is, as getting better a writer is learning to listen more to that. Mm-hmm. Because usually when I come to one of those moments where I go, oh no, that's what's really going on. Now I have to rewrite half the book. I realized that I already knew that. I just had been not listening to what I knew.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had that experience where you've had to rewrite half a book?
Oh, well, yeah, that's kind of my writing process. I keep trying to change that up, and so I keep, you know, I'll go to classes or I'll read a book or I'll do something. I'm like, oh, okay, this kind of plotting thing will work, and sometimes I even have what I think is an entire plot, and then I get 3/4 of the way through, which is what I'm doing right now with the sequel, The Dead Before Dying. I got 3/4 through, and I was like, oh, right. That's what the book's really about. So usually when it comes to...
Wow, she sounds like a major pantser.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I try really hard, but yeah. Usually by the time I'm done with the book, if the book's, you know, 80,000 words, I've probably got at least 40,000 in what I call my graveyard file.
I want a graveyard file.
Oh, that's awesome.
Great idea. Characters dying all over the place.
That's a good name for a paranormal. Paranormal writer's graveyard file. Wow, I bet that's dark and twisty in there.
Yeah, I started calling it that because people keep saying kill your darlings, right? And I think it was Between was actually the worst for me. By the time I was done with that book, it originally had a completely different name. Really, all that remains of the original draft of that book are a couple of character names and sort of who they are.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
It was that book just about killed me, actually. Well, not really, but I ended up starting my graveyard file with that book because it just made it a little bit easier. If I knew I wasn't going to throw it away forever, maybe someday I could make use of this little bit or my favorite phrase or something, then I started doing that. So now for every book I write, I actually do have a file in that folder that is called the graveyard file, and that's where I keep anything that I think I probably need to throw away.
I have this major idea, like you take your normal book that you've wrote and then you have alternate endings. So you pull out the things from the graveyard file and you have these alternate paths. It could be like a whole different kind of book.
Oh my gosh, man, that kind of blew my mind. Could you imagine that? Or you need something dark and twisty, you have to delve into the graveyard file. I'll just go see what's...
Neil Patrick Harris.
He wrote a book like that. It has all these different endings, and it's like a choose your own mystery. And so you read part of it, and then you decide, does he die? Does he commit suicide? Does he, you know, whatever. And then you go on to the next piece, and it's the same thing, and you keep choosing different paths. So you go to page 267 and find out the rest. And then you choose your path again.
Well, you know, someday when I get, like, really famous and everybody wants to read my books just because, maybe I'll just take bits from all of the graveyard files from all the different genres and mix them all up into one book and see what happens.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds fun.
That does sound fun.
Make and stir.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, gosh, that would be fun. I wonder if Stephen King has a graveyard file. He'd have an interesting graveyard file,
ooh,
wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool, that's wonderful. So let's just talk quickly about Closer Home, because obviously you just published Closer Home. I didn't realize you had two books so close together. I mean, that's interesting that you published in February and in March. But Closer Home is women's fiction through Lake Union Publishing, who is also my publisher, and that's how I kind of know you. Tell us about your journey about getting that sort of book out. Tell us a little bit about the story as well.
Okay, sure. Well, really how that came to be. I am what I told my agent a little while back. I am what I am now calling the queen of the misfit book.
I love all your titles. You should be calling your graveyard files and the misfit books.
Well, you know, see, this happened. Because with the Between books, for example, they were marketed as urban fantasy. I never really did think they were urban fantasy. I think they're more a little bit sword and sorcery, but there is some urban fantasy. And they didn't really fit nicely in a niche, which was part of the problem. So then I wrote Dead Before Dying, and I was all excited about it, and I sent it to my agent, and her initial reaction was, I'm not sure, I don't know where we're going to sell this. So I loved the book, though, and my readers had loved it, and, you know, I like quirky books. So she was willing to try, and yay, we did find it a home, and that was all wonderful. But at that time, she said, you know, why don't we try, I really, really like the voice that you're using here for Dead Before Dying, and what I want you to do for me, if you're willing, is give a try at writing, you know, something different. Let's, how about women's fiction? So I was like, yeah, okay, sure, I'm up for a challenge. And I discovered as I was writing the women's fiction that I absolutely loved it. It really is a genre that appeals to me very much. I think for the reasons that I've said before, you know, I do have a deep background in psychology and human nature and all of that stuff. So just kind of lends itself to that. So I really did love writing the book. So then we sold it to Lake Union, which was awesome. And hopefully there will be more. I'm working on another one now. So.
And what, tell us a little bit about what the story's about, Carrie.
The story of Closer Home is the story really of, well, three women, really, if we count the dead ones. See, I can't stay away from them. really at all.
That's how you get to the graveyard, folks. You have to use them.
It's the story of two sisters, in a way, and then the next generation as well. So we have a small-town music teacher. Her name is Lise, who hasn't spoken to her younger sister for about 10 years. Because as we find out, as the story opens, Callie has just died in a publicity stunt. She's a big-time rock country star. She has this huge career, really, which she owes much of to Lise, but has not ever given her the credit. So when Callie dies, Lise inherits the fortune, the fame, her 16-year-old niece that she doesn't even know, and the paparazzi, which for a small-town girl are none of them things that she's really looking for. Her niece doesn't know who her father is, and with her mother having died, that's something she really, really wants to know. So she finds her mother's old journal, and in there are the names of all the boys her mother happened to sleep with the year that she got pregnant with her daughter.
Oh,
and so the two, Lise and her new niece, set out avoiding the paparazzi as much as possible, trying to find out who the father of the baby is. Well, not baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds great. I can picture it as you're talking about it. Something about the way you've set this all up and the way you're describing it, I can visualize it all. That makes me really, really want to read that book.
Well, good. I hope it has that effect on other people as well.
Me too.
I mean, it's been doing very well. I mean, you had some great reviews. I've actually been following you because you were published the week before me and got a great cover, and everyone seems to really enjoy it.
Right. So far, yeah. You know, I laugh at the bad reviews this time around, actually, where there was one of them that really amused me. I can't remember why now, to tell you the truth. It was like, oh yeah, I enjoyed this book. I enjoyed this book better than I thought I would. And it was like a 2 or 3-star review. And I'm just like, you know, if you thought you were going to like it less than that, what?
Oh, we have real life jokes about the star review.
I think that was the same dude.
I had a guy give me a 3-star yesterday, and he went into how the book was the wrong shape, and it was formatted wrong. And you're like, and that's my problem, why?
Oh, my gosh.
People are out there. You just have to go, whoa, okay, welcome to the crazy world. Anyone's allowed to read. Why can we teach these people to read? Never mind.
That's fine.
It's all good. And it was very exciting for me. This book has done better for me as far as sales go than any of my others. And I was very excited to hit the, you know, top 100 of Amazon overall.
Hey, you became a bestseller for a while. I remember.
Yeah, well, you pointed it out to me. Thanks very much.
That's awesome.
I'm tracking everybody. Make sure they know they're famous, you know. Hey, you're famous. Did you know you're a bestseller? Which is fabulous. How wonderful. And it is still doing well. I've noticed it's staying pretty good in the sales. So well done for doing that. So obviously, it is striking a chord with readers, and that's amazing.
It is, and I am loving that. That is one thing, you know, when you connect with readers, that's a really, really wonderful thing. Nothing feels better than getting one of those emails where somebody's lets you know that they were up all night reading your book and that it touched them in some way. When you're writing, as you guys know, you're in your own little world and kind of locked into your characters and trying to do this thing, and you never really know whether you succeeded or not. So
right. When
somebody reaches out to let you know that what you've spent all this time and heartache and energy doing actually touched them, then that is an amazing and wonderful thing.
No, so true.
That's very true. Very true.
I love the fact you're so committed to your work, though, because you're like, you know what? I feel really good about this book. I'm going to go, I feel good about it, and you'll find a home for it, I'm sure, either way. So be nice to pick it up, though.
I tend to get, stories find me. I don't, you know, and once they get a hold, it's like I almost feel obligated to them. It's like, okay, I gave you life. Now I have to make sure that you grow and get finished. And I don't feel good about just abandoning that because publishing doesn't want that story for some reason. So, yeah, it doesn't help me become more successful or anything.
But you know what? You get the story out there. And that's validating. That's wonderful.
Good.
Okay. Good cry. This is good. Come on.
Okay, well, we want to dig into your brilliant brain there and find out what kind of social media sites you use and what is working well for you and what is kind of a mystery to you.
Okay.
Dish, girl.
You hear the panic edge to the laughter there.
Yes, the cackle. The maniacal laugh. Okay, this ought to be good.
So, you really want me to answer that question now?
Yes, tell us.
We're just moving on.
I'm really entertained now. Let's hear it.
Okay, well, once upon a time when I first started in this journey, Twitter was my favorite. I loved it a lot. When I started Twitter, I was on Twitter as Uppington Smythe.
Oh, what?
Which was a wonderful thing because it was very freeing and nobody really knew who I was.
Oh, that's cool. Uffington Smythe.
Where did you get that name from?
That's hilarious.
Well, see, now that's a long story. I have to think about whether I can tell you that or not.
She's so much fun. Wow.
It's a code name that I borrowed from somebody and I probably actually can't tell you that.
That's okay. No. We can leave it as borrowed code name. That's original enough. That's good.
Let me just say, it was wonderful and I loved it. And I was working crisis at the time, which was even better because then I would just say things like, well, I'm off to jail. I'll catch you later.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
So it was fun, but then around the time when I was looking at, I'm really close to maybe being published, I had a nibble from, you know, my first agent that asked for an exclusive and all that sort of thing. I was like, okay, now I have to be legit. So
I have to be an adult now.
Oh, dang it, reality.
So that when I meet agents at conferences and stuff, I say my name is Carrie Schaefer, they know who that is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Be Uppington, you know? Which I still want to publish a book under that name someday. We're waiting.
You should.
So,
it should be called The Graveyard.
Maybe The Graveyard Files.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It should be called The Graveyard Files.
Ooh, well, that would be fun. You guys are giving me ideas. So I became paper, and that was really awesome for a few years. Really, still with Twitter, I had a lot of fun and met a lot of people. We used to talk a lot on Twitter. We had a lot of conversations and chatting back and forth and all that sort of thing. I don't find that happening anymore, and I'm not really sure why. It seems
got very big, though. Twitter's got huge. So posts fly by really quickly, I find.
Yeah.
And I think that may be it. I actually have friends, you know, that I made on Twitter that are still friends, you know, 7 years later, that I then went on to meet in person, and we did stuff, and we went to conferences together and all of those things, and we're really pretty close, and it was awesome. And we would check in with each other every day. But you're right, it's gotten too big for that, I find. And so I don't spend nearly as much time doing the Twitter thing as I used to. It's funny, because I didn't used to like Facebook at all, and now really what I'm gravitating to mostly is Facebook. I am finding that to be where I'm talking to the most people. I do have a Pinterest account, and I think Pinterest is kind of cool, but back to my limited bandwidth problem.
Oh, right. Got to pick and choose.
Yeah, and time. My other problem is time. I work full-time besides having two different books that seem to be on this parallel time frame thing. Life gets a little crazy. I do like Pinterest. I keep wanting to do more with Pinterest, and I'm wanting to try some of the others. I just haven't had the time and opportunity to. I have accounts in just about everything.
Yeah. So you are there. It's just a matter of time, and you know, you can't. I've said this to other authors too. You can't do everything well. You kind of have to pick one or two that you've put a lot of time into and then support the other one so that you have a presence there.
Right.
And I agree with you that I used to talk to people a lot more on Twitter. Like every night we'd go have a conversation, hang out with a bunch of people. It does seem a lot more commercial and like put your stuff out there and maybe have very quick conversations. I don't know if it's just my habits have changed or if Twitter is changing into something different. I don't know. I'd like to hear. Maybe our listeners could, you know, give us some feedback on that if they felt the same thing. Because then I did the same thing. I switched over to Facebook and I spent a lot more time hanging out with people on Facebook. And it's the same people. There, you know, some of the people I have in both places, it's just that it's easier to talk on Facebook. And, you know, there's a lot of different people on both. But it's interesting
right,
that that's you said.
True. I don't know. I find on Twitter, lots of times I feel like I'm just talking to myself. You know, I don't even know.
I always talk back to you, Carrie, when I see you there.
I know you do.
I love the fact that every post normally starts with I need to drink coffee, or I haven't had enough coffee, or I need coffee.
That's because my twittering all happens first thing in the morning.
She's craving the caffeine. That's funny.
Don't feel like my day is complete unless I know whether Carrie got her coffee or not. You know, like, did she get a coffee? That's all I need to know.
So this is my branding, Zan. I feel
good branding. Well, there you go.
I love it.
It works.
Well, really for fun, I actually did, you know, create and give away some Shadow Valley Maynard Blend coffee just for kicks because, well, it was a fun thing to do.
That's
yeah,
cool.
That's a good idea.
That is a great idea, especially if that's what you're talking about on there. That is part of your brand. Okay, so we've talked about this several times. You live in a very rural part of Washington State, and that's challenging for us connecting with you, but it must be challenging also for like book signings and other things. How do you arrange those when you're kind of out in the middle of wherever it is you are?
the middle of everything that matters.
Oh, okay. That works. Also known as your truck, right?
Yeah, she's beaming to us from her truck. She had to go to a coffee shop and sit outside the truck, which I love. It just makes me laugh.
No, she's
speaking of which, it's getting hot outside, so it's getting warmer in the truck.
She's
looking out the windows and we hear the cars go past. The birds are actually more problem. When we've tried to do me outside here, because I'm in a rural part, the birds just are so loud.
Yeah, they can be very loud. And if I was in my house, it would be the cats. Probably I have one cat and it fucks up. So,
well, the cats could help out with the bird problem for sure.
Yeah. This is true. So, yeah, trying to do signings and things, yeah, a little bit of a challenge. Spokane is a reasonable size place, which is a couple hours from me. I am doing a signing there with a wonderful friend next month, June 4th. There's the bookstore. I have a tendency, I used to live in Tri-Cities, Washington, for about 10 years, actually, and in Kennewick, there's a Barnes & Noble in Kennewick that has the absolute most fantastic events coordinator person probably in the whole face of the planet as far as books go. I adore Wendy. So I go to Tri-Cities pretty much every book that comes out and do a signing there for her. And she actually came to me this year. And we did the most fun signing I have ever done, which is an event at a local brewery here.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's a good idea.
So we did Authors and Ales at Northern Ales. And that was great fun. And, you know, signings, you've done them. People come in and it's often a little awkward. People who don't know you are going to come for you or trying to look the other way because, oh, look, there's somebody who might want to sell me something.
Yes, I
know. You know, there's the don't make eye contact thing that happens. And, you know.
Yeah, there's gonna be, you have to invite a whole bunch of friends just so somebody talks to you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So that was not a problem at the ball. People had a couple drinks and they were more than willing to just come over and chat. And, you know, I had a lot of friends who came because it was, well, frankly, a fun place to be.
Yeah, that's a good concept, though. Yeah,
that's great.
Break down the social barriers with a little bit of booze thrown in there. That works.
Oh, sure.
That's
cool. I also did a book signing at the local grocery store here once.
Oh, you like to mix it up.
Are you between the carrots and the peas? How does that work?
So it was kind of in front of sale wall, you know, where all of the items that are for sale are all stacked up.
Did people come and ask you where things were?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, and I sold a lot of books. It was the only way.
Oh, there you go. That's see? Good. There's me laughing at it. She's selling books in there.
Well, here was the thing. Because of where I live, there is a small bookstore, but it's pretty dedicated to classics and religious books, and it really did never seem like the sort of place that was going to embrace what I'm writing.
Right.
So I have to say I've been bad, and I have never actually gone and asked. I just didn't. So trying to get my books into town here, I got really determined when, I think it was when Wake World came out. So I kept calling one of the grocery stores, and then they hooked me up with the grocery store does not bring in the books. There is a supplier whose whole thing is bringing in whatever books going to the grocery store. So then I had conversations with them repeatedly, and they finally got my books into the store for me, which was really exciting because, well, it's my small hometown, and I could actually say to people, I'm in Super One, and then they could come down to buy the books. So then I talked to the manager of the store, and we set up a book signing, and they were very sweet. They gave me a little plant and a card, and it was actually pretty fun.
That's cool. Well, it sounds like you worked it out for sure.
She's creative. That's what she is.
Very creative. Very creative.
This whole thing, here's what I keep telling myself. I got into this because I like writing books and doing creative things. The whole marketing side of it, if you let it, it can get really overwhelming and intimidating and turn into, well, an albatrossy kind of thing, you know, that you don't really want to do. I want this to be a life that I like living. That's my goal. So when I do promo stuff, I try and make it be something that's fun and, yeah, creative if I can.
Okay. I think you're succeeding at that part for sure. What is your writing process? How do you set up your world so that you get all this writing done with a full-time job and everything else you have going on?
Yeah, that took me a while to figure out. Here's the thing. Everybody thinks because of my early morning tweets and my coffee and everything that I'm a morning person. This is not true. No, not true. It took me years of, well, kids and all sorts of things. Really, what started by getting up in the morning to write was when my kids were little, especially after my husband died. I discovered when I got up in the morning, I was not somebody that you want to talk to. And there's a word I want to use here that I'm avoiding because, well, you know, I was an unpleasant person in the morning, as I have taught my sons to call women who are less than nice. So I would wake up in the morning and be an unpleasant person. And I discovered that if I got up
in the morning, trying not to swear.
No, she's being very good.
An hour before the boys, I could, you know, maybe journal, whatever. I wasn't writing as much then. I could maybe be nice by the time they got up. So I sort of had that habit kind of a little bit in place around the time I figured out that if I really wanted to guarantee writing time during the day, the only time I could be sure of that was if I did it before I started doing everything else. So I get up at 4:30, I write from 5 to 6.
Wow. That's crazy.
On a regular daily basis. If I don't do that, what I find is I get up, I do whatever has to be done, the things that you have to do, multiply through the day. There's the day job, you get home, you're tired. There's always a crisis or two in my world. Anyway, things happen and the writing doesn't. So if that is the most important thing in my day, really, to me, that I want to get done, then I have to do it first. Right. So I have trained myself to drag myself out of bed, drink a lot of coffee, and do some writing in the morning.
That's good. I love that. That's a really organized way to do it. You know, we have Vaughn Murphy, a few of our other authors that have been on that. That's their strategy. And I toy with the idea. And then I'm like, nah, I just can't. Oh, I hate morning. So, I mean, I think you do too, but you've managed to work that in and luckily.
Well, it's bred of desperation here. I'm looking at your picture, KJ, and I think I have a few years on you. So here's what happens.
This is how you're going to end up. Okay. I'm going to have to get up at 4:30 and write. Hopefully I can and wrangle it so I don't have to. I'd rather be up at from like midnight to 2 a.m. and write, because I'm much more of a night owl. And the problem, I can't do that during when the kids get up, because I have to get up early to get them ready. But I can do it in the summertime when they're not in school and then sleep in. So.
Right. Well, and, you know, if the gods are kind, then, you know, we can do all those things. It's just I've had this damn day job. I have to go to work.
Yeah.
I have to go to work. I have to make money, and so I can continue to write, basically.
Yeah. You can continue to make yourself get up at 4:30 in the morning.
Right. She needs to buy that coffee, man.
I'm a morning writer. Same thing. I'm not really a morning person, but I force myself to get up. And I've already written today. I write for the first hour of the day, like you. Otherwise, everything else just comes in. You know, and my day's gone.
I know. Right. I know the feeling. Did very well.
You know, this is the only way I manage to really, especially if I'm on deadline, I will write other times. I'll write when I get home, if I can stay awake long enough, and then weekends. And I've been very fortunate right now. My job at this time, I'm working 4/10s and I have a day off. So I have one full day that I can devote to really getting my head in the story, which is really a wonderful thing, especially writing mystery and stuff, trying to figure out plot points and all that. So.
Well, that's good. Yeah, at least you have that one day to just kind of calmly go through it instead of being these little pieces of time. So, well, good.
Right.
Have you told us what you're working on?
What I'm working on now? No, not really. I think we sort of alluded to it. I actually have two things in process right now. So I'm working on a sequel to Dead Before Dying. It's called A Soul Before Dying. I was going to be finished with my first draft like a month ago, but I got about a chapter from the end and realized that I had it all wrong. Not all wrong, but, you know, so I had to go back, and I was at that time working on a proposal for my new women's fiction also. So the plan was going to be that I was going to finish the Shadow Valley book, get that off to my beta readers so they could be working on it while I was writing the first chapters for Closer Home. I mean, not Closer Home, but my new women's fic, so that I could avoid what I did last time where I was writing Closer Home and Dead Before Dying really pretty much at the same time.
Wow.
And they're completely different books.
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine.
My significant other has asked me to please never do that again. So I was trying, and that was the plan. But then, you know, they're on a trajectory now. So my next women's fiction and my sequel were kind of coming due about the same time. So, again, I'm working on two. So I'm still working on Soul Before Dying, and I'm working on a new women's fiction that I'm absolutely in love with. Talk about it yet.
You're not allowed to talk about it yet? That's okay. Well, we'll have you on when it comes out, because we know that someone's going to pick it up, because it sounds wonderful. And we can talk about it then when you get to that point. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
That's a good idea. Well, cool. That's exciting. Sounds like you're super busy writing and life and everything else. Okay, so can we lightning round her?
I think so. She's up for it. Are you up for lightning round?
But as we know now, if I'm scared, I have to do it, right?
That's right.
Exactly.
It's a publishing-related thing. It's required.
Okay.
So crack your window so you don't get too hot now. You ready?
If I suddenly stop speaking, I've just, you know, died like one of those dogs in the car.
Oh, no, somebody quickly go to the Starbucks Inn. Where are you?
Starbucks? No, you're kidding, right?
She's in the middle of nowhere. She's just a coffee stand.
Everything that matters. There is a Starbucks, actually, in the Safeway, but that's not where I am. So,
okay. Well, you're on your own then. Sorry. We'll try to be quick. Okay. What is your favorite band or artist?
Oh, I know this one.
I was hoping you would.
I always worry about that because favorites, you know, questions. Mark Knopfler is my favorite artist.
Wow.
Musician. Person. And actually, I should make a plug here because my second favorite, they should be my first, but I'm a terrible parent. Oh. My son, my youngest son, Brandon, is in a wonderful up-and-coming rock and roll band called Stealing Spoons.
Oh my gosh! My book is called Stealing Time. We have to get them to play a song for our Stealing Time debut or something.
Oh, hey, absolutely. They've just released free online, mind you. Their Facebook site is Stealing Spoons, and they have a couple. We sent them to the studio, and they have a couple professionally recorded songs.
Very cool.
Wow, cool.
What genre is that?
What's your son's name?
My son's name is Brandon.
Hey, good going, Brandon.
Yeah, good job, Brandon.
Schaefer like me. It's rock, you know, he's influenced a lot by old classic rock and roll, but there's 90s and they write all their own music, so it's awesome stuff.
Very cool. Check it out, definitely. Left coast or right coast?
What?
We caught another one, Suzanne. East coast or west coast? We're trying to be fancy.
I'm directionally challenged. So
California coast or...
I mean, really just stand which way you're standing. If you're facing down the way, it's a different left and right. So.
Yeah. So, you know, okay.
The one I'm closest to.
Pacific or Atlantic? How's that? You know your oceans, right?
There we go. Pacific. I do know my oceans. Pacific, absolutely.
There we go. I was thinking that was going to be your answer anyway. But what is your favorite riding spot? Your truck.
No. What happens if I turn right in my truck? I have done this, by the way. I fall asleep every time.
Oh, really?
I have a couple of favorites. The cafe out of which I'm sitting right now, Cafe 103, I love to ride here. Oddly enough, I love my local Pizza Hut. It's my favorite table. It's quiet in there. It's nice and brightly lit. They actually have internet. And the little couple of the waitresses, they just know me. I walk in, they go, "Do you want your usual?" And I go, "Yeah." And they bring me my little pan pizza and glass of water, and then they just leave me alone. They're wonderful.
That's cool. I never thought of a Pizza Hut. That would probably work.
It's really, ours is, I don't know if they're all like this, but our small town one here is really fabulous. And I have a writing loft at home, and I do really like that very much as well. I have rainbows come in the window in the morning because I have a wonderful little prism in the window. But the cats do kind of get in the way.
And it's a writing loft. That's an excellent title.
Writing loft.
Writing loft.
Sometimes I'll have to lock the cats in the garage periodically because they...
Yeah. And they scratch your car while they're waiting for you, right? That's funny. Are you a pantser or a plotter? We know.
We know the answer to that one, yeah. I'm a pantser. I'm working towards being a little bit more plotful. I have key scenes that I know to look for and aim for, which is very helpful in the book. And I always kind of plan ahead for those. But, yeah, then I go back Throw it all away
and start over. That's so funny. Wow. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
I wouldn't.
Wow.
Nowhere you want to go?
That's funny.
You know, I've been asked this question, and I always start throwing all this reality on it, and I get scared. I'm like, that time would be interesting, but, you know, dinosaurs or volcanoes or the Spanish Inquisition or they were torturing people or there was the plague.
Dreaded reality.
How about back to your early 20s? Would you go back there?
No.
She's happy now, Suzanne. She's very happy. No.
She's very happy where she is.
Yes. Well, that's a perfectly acceptable answer. There's no reason you can't be completely original and be the first person to say that. I love it. That's great. If you had a superpower, what would it be? I'm sure you have an answer for this.
Honestly, I want to fly. Cool. I would be a flyer.
A flyer. I love it. Very cool.
Yeah. I used to have, like, when I was young, I had these wonderful flying dreams. And I'm really, really, it's very tragic because I don't have them anymore. I just don't know how I could make that, you know, happen again. But they were wonderful. I would just be walking down the road and I would get lighter and lighter. And all of a sudden I'd be soaring and I could make myself go higher and lower and kind of swoop. And it was wonderful.
Wow. So. That's cool. I've had those dreams. I fly, and then I also have dreams where I can swim without having to come up for air.
Oh, well, swim, that would be really cool.
Swim really fast. Yeah, it's great. It's
when all my dreams, I've lost something. I'm trying to find something, and I'm running from train station to train station. I don't have any of these nice dreams.
Oh, Suzanne.
So is this your superpower then, losing?
Finding things.
No, that's like, finding things. And I wouldn't dream like that anymore.
I don't know. Put a twist on that. You know, there are things that need to be lost. So, I have another book idea now. So,
yeah, that's a
could be of help today.
That is a good concept.
You know, have a character whose talent really is losing things, and at first, you know, as they're young, this is really a tragic sort of a thing, and they think it's a disability, and then they discover it's a strength. So, you know, go for it.
Yeah. Look at her writing a book on the air.
I know. I love that. That's hilarious. Which book do you wish you had written? I can't wait to hear this one.
Oh, my. Oh, there are several. That's a tough one. You know, one that I always think that about is The Secret Life of Bees.
Oh, cool.
That's a great book.
Every time I read that book, I was like, oh, man, I wish I'd written this book. Maybe The Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
You know, you were the third person to say that.
Yeah.
What, The Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, I've heard other people say that. Isn't that funny? Well, it's interesting.
It's such a wonderful world that he created with The Lord of the Rings. And I think it was the first real fantasy book that I ever read, actually. I've said this before in other places. My mother, who was the one who taught me to read, was not into fantasy type stuff at all. No fairy tales, no any of that. So naturally, of course, that was my thing. Mm-hmm. But I didn't discover fantasy novels until I was, I want to say probably 19 or so. And, somebody on a band tour had they were reading the Lord of the Rings, and they lent me the first book, and that was it. I was done.
Cool.
For it. So, love it.
That is really cool. What is your favorite writing author moment so far? Dead silence. We stumped her.
That's a hard one. I always struggle with the favorite moments. Probably finishing something.
Something. Anything. Everything.
I don't have an answer.
Okay.
I can't believe that
We'll give you a pass on that one.
Okay.
Last question. One thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer.
I have to think about that one, too. I don't get a pass now, probably.
Yeah, you used your free pass.
Otherwise, you wouldn't win the prize.
Phone a friend? Do you want to phone a friend?
Yeah, what do you wish? I don't know. You know, I figured out really early that writing was kind of like both gift and curse, and that it was going to be both. So it's not that.
What about the marketing aspect or the social media aspect?
Well, yeah, I don't know if I wish somebody had told me that.
Well, that's true. I might have scared you off.
Somebody had told me. I probably wish somebody maybe had told me, although I wouldn't have listened, a long time ago, that writing is not just an art and an inspiration, that it is a discipline, you know, that waiting for your muse isn't going to get you anywhere. You have to write whether there is one or isn't one, or whether your muse is hiding for the day or has gone on vacation. If you're going to write, you have to write.
That is great advice. And I'm sure the first 10 years of you trying to write a book, that was a definite true statement, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it took a lot. It took a whole lot longer than that. For me, it was really when the lights finally came on, somewhere in the middle of many, many revisions of writing between, when one of my friends really mercilessly shredded it for me, and I called him names and wept bitterly. And then I finally figured it out that really it's not just, all of a sudden it would just be, you know, if you put beautiful words together, then that would make a lovely book and everybody would want to read it. Well, no, that's not true. Craft is important, you know, that you need to have plot, you need to have structure, you need to pay attention to genre, all those kinds of things. It took me way too long to figure that out. So if anybody could have told me something and I would have actually listened, that would have been the thing.
That's good. That's a great answer and a good lesson for a lot of people out there listening. I love it.
And it's good to be reminded because some days I get up and write and I think, I don't know if that, any of that was any good today, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that's what we have to do sometimes.
Right, you have to.
Right, I agree with that. And I don't think anything is ever wasted. It's like anything I throw away, I used to feel bad about that. I don't really anymore because it's always background information or something that I now understand about a character that I didn't know before, which is going to be helpful, or something that I know did not happen in the book.
Yeah.
So, you know, nothing's ever wasted.
Right. Well, no, I agree. Good attitude. Well, Carrie, this has been an absolute pleasure getting to know you a little bit and hearing all your good stories. You've made us laugh a whole bunch on this show.
Laughing is a good thing. And yeah, so since we've been working for a long time to actually make this event happen, I'm excited that we pulled it off.
Yeah, we got did. There.
We pulled it off. High five, you guys.
Yay!
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on our show. And please join us next week. We have Ellie Alexander, and she talks about her cooking-inspired fiction. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.